Everything I gave you was in here?
The thing with stars didn't make it. But if it has a star on the first. On the opposite side of this page, there's the list of the photos.
Right. I'm looking at this one, so I'll know just what I can. What I can call on. Okay, whatever. Okay, the topic that we are discussing today is obviously a very an important topic, both practically and conceptually, and it's also a very large topic. There'll be no attempt to exhaust the issues, but just to bring some perspective to some of them, to the range at least, and if people want to interrupt me and, with questions or whatever, we can do that as well. And we'll try to leave a little time at the end for some of these. But we're not going to be able to cover the whole topic, not even all the makoros that are here. Let me just start off by way of introduction. The very notion of Hanach Lahem al Yisrael Mutav Shiyu Shogin Valyu Mazidin is one which is really jarring, I think, to anybody who understands what halacha is really, what the world of halacha, what living a life of halacha is really all about. And it engenders a little bit of discomfort when we encounter it as a sugya in the Gemara, and I think it engenders some sleepless night, or it should, for a posek, a mora hora, who actually has to decide on such issues. The concept of hanach and mutav shogigin appears foreign and antithetical, because a life of Kedusha and a life of Halacha is by definition one which is built on very high standards for individuals, for one's fellow, and for the Tzibur as a whole. It's also one which is characterized by a sense of purpose, which includes primarily the performance of mitzvahs, and a sense of optimism and ambition vis-a-vis our fellow Jews. The very notion of Hanach then, leave them alone, let them wallow in in lower standards, seems incompatible with things like Kol Yisrael Areidim Zeh LaZeh, even though that concept also includes components like Chatei Kedei Shetezaka Chavercha, another interesting topic, when a person should sacrifice his own standards for the sake of others. Again, I think a overlapping topic to this topic. But nonetheless, the general thrust of Kol Yisrael Areidim Zeh LaZeh is how to upgrade other people's performance. Same is certainly true with the mitzvah of Tochacha. The relationship between Kol Yisrael Arevim and Tochacha is an important aspect of this whole topic. Mitzvah of Tochacha is very wide-ranging. Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Hei Amud Aleph, which is one of the Maamar Makomos, makes it perfectly clear that not giving proper Tochacha is one which isn't just doesn't just trigger Maisa Aveira for you, but in addition to that, it makes you somewhat responsible for the averos of the avaryanim, which is a very ambitious, on the negative side, a very ambitious idea. Chachmei Adar nitfasim ba'avonos Adar imposes additional responsibility. The idea of tochacha apilu elef ha'amim, and on an individual level, ad kedei nazifa or haka'a, the fact that you're supposed to keep pushing the tochacha. All of this reflects the fact that it's intolerable for not only ourselves, but for other Jews to be involved in Averos and for us to stand by idly. And the question is, how do all this fit in with the notion of Mutav Shiyu Shogigin, which is all about relative standards, the relative acceptability of a Shogig, if it's that or Mezid. Shogig is not a small matter. We're not talking about Misasek, and we're not talking about Ones. We're talking about Shogeg, which is Mechayev Achatos, which is a full Maisa Veira. The idea of ignorance being bliss, Hanach Lehem Mutav Shiyu Shogin, is strange. Ein Amaretz Chasid, Ein Bur Yirei Chet. Moreover, the whole concept of, let's say, Kihem Chayenu Ve'orach Yameinu, we speak of V'chay Bohem. V'chay Bohem, of course, allows for a heter as well, namely, if the Anna says, Yehoreg Val Yava rather Val Yehoreg, so generally the response is Yava Val Yehoreg B'chai Bahem. But we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that the main pasuk and the main concept of B'chai Bahem is that one's quality of life is defined by the mitzvot that he performs. The concept of standing by and watching as our fellow Jew, or even a larger group in the community, is not adhering to this quality of life of Chai Bohem is peculiar. Talmud Torah demands Lilmod, and Talmud Torah demands Lalamed, and it demands Laasos. And Mutav Shu Shogigin, albeit reluctantly, implies that one is resigned to the notion of people who are incorrigible, who can't be convinced, who can't be influenced. And that too is strange when you consider the idea of Chesed Kashrus that every Jew has, etc. So the concept of Mutav Shu Shogin on the surface is one which seems to challenge some of the foundations, literally some of the foundations of Yahadus as we normally understand it. And yet on another level, and precisely given everything that I've just said, how incongruous it appears to be, precisely in light of that, obviously we're compelled to look at Mutav Shu Shogin from a totally different perspective. Instead of being viewed as a kula, we're soft, as it were, on other people's laxity and improper behavior, it should instead be seen as a testament to, not to pragmatic expediency, but to Avos Yisrael, and to a sense of tolerance and optimism that if we, you know, shepherd people along in a, I guess, in a more subtle and sophisticated and a more long-term manner, that ultimately we'll achieve the objectives of V'chai Bohem in a more efficient way. It's a testimonial to Avos Yisrael in that despite all of the above, occasionally it's proper to protect Klal Yisrael and individual Avaryanim from mazed by allowing them to engage in an action which otherwise would be considered to be problematic. It's a testament to the noxiousness, the complete unacceptability of Averos b'mezid, that we're even willing to compromise a Mais Avera to avoid that particular status. I think that's the way to look at it. And if that really is the way to look at it, then, you know, at minimum, the sleepless nights and the question of taking seriously each issue that we confront becomes particularly crucial. Because it's not that under certain circumstances he's on his own, it's not my problem, Ochacha or Kol Yisrael Arevim doesn't apply, but on the contrary, this becomes a way of applying and expressing Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh. It becomes almost an extension of Tochacha when you say, as the Gemara says in Yevamos, Kashem Shev Mitzvah Lomar Davar Anishma Kach Mitzvah Lolomar Davar She'eno Nishma. It always bothered me, you know, the Kashem. You know, they're opposites, obviously. One is Tochacha and the other is leaving him alone because he's incorrigible. But the point of the Kashem is very profound. It is that sometimes the Shtika, sometimes appearing to be going along or not to being disturbed, is a function of caring about him more, protecting him, even at the expense of what otherwise would be considered, you know, unthinkable. The balance between these two factors also then becomes, I think, looked at as an internal matter and in a more complicated way. It's always important to calibrate the impact on individuals and especially the larger impact on community, this balance between saving people from a worse fate of Averos B'mezid and thereby allowing certain things to get through B'shoge. At some point, that can potentially erode the foundations of the halacha and the goal itself becomes undercut. The truth is that the Rashbats said this very nicely, I think, in the Tshuva. Do we have it here? Okay, Chelik Beis. Where is it? 21. Okay, 21. If you just look very quickly, again, I'm going to try to not quote more than I have to, but at the end of an important Tshuva where he makes several interesting and important ha'aros, these are page numbers? I mean, the numbers refer to pages.
Yeah.
Okay. So this would be page 21.
It's on page 13.
I'm sorry? The 21 is the order, I see. Okay. So in the end of the tshuva, he discusses this, and he says that v'ilu heinachnu bnei adam al mashe shogin b'chol yom hayu mosifin shgagos v'tipal haTorah ma'at ma'at. This is his statement that you have to limit the application of mutav shiyu shogigin, and you have to make certain that you don't apply it, even if you apply it legitimately. In all cases, if you apply it too much, it ends up undercutting everything. And I think that is true. The issue of mutav shiyu shogigin is particularly an acute one in our day, and it requires a serious reflection whether some of the flexibility is either going to be expanded or constricted because of the unusual circumstances of our day, in which, not just our day, but the last several hundred years, the majority of the Jewish community is no longer observant. In a context in which Shmiras HaMitzvos was the norm, and Mutav Shiyu Shogin was an anomaly, but a particular Nihug, we'll get to that soon, what kind of Nihugim, how entrenched it has to be, etc. In that kind of context, there's room for greater flexibility on the one hand, and also greater pursuit of the ideal at the same time. Greater flexibility because the kind of concern that is expressed by the Rashbats is not really a significant one. Basically, most Jews are shul going, halacha, observing in every way. And we're talking about foibles here and there of the community or of the individual, quirks, no one's perfect. Maybe beneath the surface there are even a reflection of some serious problems, but we're not talking about eroding the entire community, which is, after all, one which is run according to the dictates of Torah and halacha. At the same time, the threat is not as great, and the opportunity to impose a greater ideal, not even to stand by for shogigim, that's also more pronounced. But that's quite different than the circumstances of the last couple of hundred years, where the majority, in some cases the large majority of the Jewish world, is in the category of mutav, shiyu, shogigim, every day about most things. We'll soon discuss the Bala Itur's qualification, difference between dvarim ha-mefurashim and dvarim she'enem mefurashim, if that has some practical meaning, and I'll discuss different perspectives on it in a moment, but I'll also explain the difference between dvarim mefurash and dvarim she'enem mefurash, that if something is a dvarim mefurash, it's not likely that people are really shogigin. Or it's at least likely that if they are shogigin, that the second that you show them that it's an explicit pasuk in the Torah, then that's the end of the shkaga, and then they become either compliant or mezidin, but they can't stay shogin for very long. But unfortunately, that first assumption is certainly not true in the last 200 years, and it's not as clear to me, at least, that that the second assumption is accepted either. So that the issues in our day, both the greater urgency to apply and the greater urgency to be careful not to over-apply, both of these are reflected. This reality that might make a difference is foreshadowed, again, in the comments of some of the Rishonim and some of the Poskim. The Ritva quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes, do we have that?
No.
We don't have that. I think I have it, actually. But the Ritva quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes in Beitza, quotes from the Chachmei Ashkenaz. Okay. He quotes from the Chachmei Ashkenaz. If I can find it in one second, I will. Otherwise, I'm not going to bother with the time. But he quotes the name of Chachmei Ashkenaz, who also invoked the authority of the Maharam Rutenberg and several others, and some of the Chachmei Tzorfat as well. I don't have it here. That Bizmanenu, there is no longer any mutav shiyu shogigin, because things have eroded to such an extent that the threat of being more flexible is one that outweighs. Is one that outweighs the advantages. On the other hand, the chidah and Birka Yosef suggests that the opposite is true. In a time when Yadenu Tkefa, when we are in control and we can impose the penalties and we can force the issue, so then the rules of Mutav Shu Shogigin are going to apply, and there'll be limits to those rules. But in a time where we can't enforce them, we can't force compliance, so then we should extend Mutav Shu Shogigin considerably. So you have in the two perspectives of the Ritva, and it's not a stira either, but the Ritva on the one hand and the comments of Birke Yosef on the other, two opposite perspectives about how a more lax society, a society in which the rule of halakha is more questionable, affects the issues of Mutav Shu Shogin. From that point of view, it would be reasonable that in our own discussion, we should consider the possibility that applying Mutav Shu Shogigin to different segments of our population might be different. The issue comes up with regard to everybody, but if we're talking about Borough Park or Bnei Brak or Geula and Mea Shearim, so certain abuses which we might apply or not apply Mutav Shu Shogigin might be treated one way. And if we're talking about the Jews of Europe or the assimilated Jews of America, then we might take a very different posture to Mutav Shu Shogigin. In one sense, we would be accenting the more flexible standards of the Chidah. In another case, the more restrictive ones of the Ritva. So I think this is something that we need to consider, as well. The complex relationship of this issue, Mutav Shu Shogin, and the concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, I think also highlights some of the tensions. And again, crystallizes, I think, the difficulty of adopting a single posture. Many of the poskim believe that Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh is the basis for saying that Mutav Shu Shogin V'lo Yu Mezidin is limited. In other words, it's a reason, it's a rationale for Mecha'a and for limiting Mutav Shu Shogin. After all, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. Therefore, I'm responsible for his behavior. I can't stand by. Moreover, his behavior impacts upon Klal Yisrael. And as such, if I could stand by from his perspective, I can't stand by in terms of the collective impact this has on Klal Yisrael. Mutav Shu Shogin, then, is going to be limited by Mechav. This, for example, is the view of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and some other Achronim, I think, who were influenced particularly by him, to question whether or not we would apply, whether we would expand Mutav Shu Shogin for people or situations in which there's no Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. Discussion of Nashim, which I'll get back to, if indeed there's no Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, whether there's a difference between Daraisa and Darabanan, whether the difference in this regard between Dvarim HaMefurashim and Dvarim She'en HaMefurashim. In other words, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh is a reason to promote Mecha'a, Tochacha, not a reason to say Mutav Shu Shogin. On the other hand, the Ksav Sofer takes exactly the opposite point of view. Ksav Sofer says that Mutav Shu Shogigin is based on Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. Because why do we really care whether or not a person violates a B'mezid or he violates B'shogeg? It's his problem. The answer is, because it isn't his problem, it's all of our problem. It's a collective problem. It's Klal Yisrael's problem. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. And therefore, we go that extra mile. Normally, we should be fulfilling the mitzvah of Hocheach Tochiach HaSamisecha and adding to our own merits, or at least not being offended by being in the presence of transgression and not doing anything to object or to uproot it. So our own personal interest promotes mecha. However, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, we have to make the ultimate sacrifice in order that Klal Yisrael be better off. Ksav Sofer says, if it's true that that Nashim are not under the normal rubric of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, we might have said, or we might have thought, that Mutav Shu Shogin doesn't apply at all to women. Birke Yosef quotes Poskim who say that maybe Mutaf Shu Shogin, especially because the classic case, which we'll read in just a minute, is Gemara Beitza and Tosefes Yom Kippurim, the way the Rambam formulates it, that it's only by Nashim. Ksav Sofer thought maybe it would only not be by Nashim. Because after all, Kol Yisrael Arayim Zelazeh doesn't apply. So, you know, if she wants to be an Avar Yonis, if I said that right, proper diktuk, then, you know, that's her problem. It's on her head. It doesn't affect Klal Yisrael. It's an individual issue between her and the Rabbona Shalom. Anashim, unfortunately, that's, you know, Isha Sachiv, Kol Yisrael Arayim Zelazeh. In the end, he rejects this idea, but he considers it, and considers it very prominently. The idea that Kol Yisrael Arayim Zelazeh, on the one hand, demands that we do mechah, and at the same time allows for some flexibility, we should be protecting and preserving even the, you know, not so idealistic members of the Jewish community, and both of these can flow in theory from Kol Yisrael Arayim Zelazeh, is a way of, let's say, accentuating that this is all a very fine line, a very subtle point. You will jump in and be mocha, or you'll step back and take a longer view of the matter. These aren't necessarily a conflict between two opposing principles as much as it is a way of, let's say, calculating internally what's the best way to proceed, what's the best way to bring people to observance. Either way, we should be mindful of the flexible comments of numerous of the poskim, providing for latitude to the posek to assess and to apply. Do we have the Ksav Sofer, or were devils to get it? The Ksav Sofer has certain interesting views on this matter, I think I mentioned. And then in the end, there's a very nice peroration where he says, in his opinion, and this is not obvious, things that are not obvious, in my opinion, are always more significant. They flow from conviction of the posek's total understanding of the corpus rather than a particular makar. They can say, oh, he misread that makar, but this is his life's understanding of Torah, of halacha. So in the end of his discussion, part of his discussion, Mutav Shu Shogin, Ksav Sofer says, it's obvious to me that these are the guidelines, but that the posek has to take responsibility, and he has a certain latitude and flexibility here in applying this. In other words, there might be circumstances which on the books, according to the Shulchan Aruch, call for Mutav Shu Shogigin, but the assessment will be almost in line of the Rashbats. If we allow this, it's not good. It's going to erode things still further. And you might have the opposite assessment. You might have a case which on the books is one in which Mutav Shu Shogigin, strictly speaking, doesn't apply, and you should require Tochacha, or Kol Yisrael Arayim Zelazeh would seem to demand that you interfere. But at the same time, your instinct, being Roas Hanolad, looking at the bigger picture, is in this case, let's allow for Mutav Shu Shogin. Now, I don't know whether most other poskim agree with the Ksav Sofer or not. I suspect that the idea, though unwritten in other contexts, is one which many poskim would be sympathetic to, given the lengths that they go to try to, you know, to integrate various factors in their psakim. But it's quite possible that other poskim are much stricter about it and see this more in terms of, you know, strict guidelines and a black and white, usur or mutter, chayev or patur, in every single case. I think it's an interesting issue, at least, to contemplate. Okay. What I want to do now, not much time, is to assess some of the actual makoros and with an eye towards doing several things. Number one, I think it's just fascinating to see what goes into, Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch even, and certainly the later poskim. You know, if you just chart as you're going along the way, what's in the Gemara, what's in the Rishonim, what became the Kubal, almost as if it's in the Gemara, even though it's only in the Rishonim, and how the various combinations emerge. Again, I don't think I'll have much time to do this, but I think this is something that when you analyze any topic from the Chumash down to contemporary life, that one should be very sensitive to. This can be a model for how we also, it's fascinating as a study, but even more important, the model, how to paskin, I think, comes from this. But in our particular case today, the objective is to examine the range of views of Mutav Shu Shogin, those who are, strict, constructionists who limit mutav shiur shogin, who expand tochacha and arvus on the one hand, or the others who see in mutav shiur shogin a wider license. To try to identify some of the factors that play a role in this subtle decision, whether you say one or the other, and which of these are probably the more normative ones, but also to try to understand what they are and what the hashkafa behind them is, so that in addition to applying this idea halachically, we're also able to get a sense of what the values are behind them. Okay, with that in mind, so let's begin some of the actual topic. The primary makoros, I'm going to go pretty quickly because I don't have that much time, I have to skip a lot anyway. The primary makoros for the din of Hanachlim Yisrael, Mutav Shishom V'Vayim Mazidin, are two Gemaras. Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kufim Chesu Beis, and the Gemara in Beit Sadaf Lamed Amid Aleph. Gemara speaks about Arake, Metapech, Mishane, B'Yom Tov. Gemara brings up reality that certain things on the books are also, yeah.
I'm sorry, I wanted to look at the first class playing a Tinoch Shenishba as a shogeg.
A Tinoch Shenishba is more than a shogeg.
So then,
but he is also a shogeg.
Okay, so I'm saying Mutav Shiur Shogeg, then he finds it sort of have a general.
Well, he's not an onus. I mean, a Tinoch Shenishba will bring a carbon. I mean, the Tinoch Shenishba may be, as I say, more than a shogeg in one respect. I mean, the issue in which this comes up is the sugya Shabbos, you know, in Kol Gadol, where the Gemara discusses, you know, the exact status of Tinoch Shenishba. He's not a Misasek, he's not an Onus, but we do look at a Tinoch Shenishba as more than a shogeg in terms of, you know, the blame, certainly. We're not going to say Hayalalumod V'lalamad, and that's reflected in, you know, viewing all of Yisurei Shabbos as one and things of that sort, etc. The discussion in the Gemara whether he's an onus or a shogeg. But for our purposes today, let's assume that a Tinoch Shenishba is a shogeg. But as I said before, to the extent that there are all sorts of factors at play here, including, you know, is it excusable that he's a shogeg, which we'll see soon, things like Dabra Mefurash and Dabra Shena Mefurash. I think that Tinoch Shenishba, that's what I said before about relating differently to different segments of society, to the people in Bnei Brak and in Borough Park, and, you know, hopefully here even as well in Washington Heights on both sides, you know, people who are steeped in Torah and basically committed and somewhat knowledgeable, you know, who, you know, should know better in some cases and at least can be or should be able to be educated in certain cases. I think that you might relate differently than to people who are Tinoch Shenishba, meaning they don't know Pasuk and Chumash. Even if you show it to them, it doesn't have the same meaning for them. So that's exactly the point, right? I think that's what I meant before about not only in terms of the policy question of eroding, and you know, how worried you should be about the, you know, other consequences, but in specifically in terms of what's defined as you know, legitimate shogeg or levels of shogeg, which I'll get to. We talk about before in a couple of minutes. I think there is a difference, but I think it's still under the rubric of shogeg. Still bring a carbon chatas. Okay. So there are these two sugyas, the Gemara in Beitz and the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara speaks about the neglect of certain, you know, clear-cut halachos. And the Gemara says, Hanach lehem liYisrael hutashu shogin v'lo yimazid. Interestingly, the Gemara in Beitz speaks about this initially in terms of Drabbanans. And then the Gemara says, no, not only Drabbanans, it applies to Daraisis as well. Gemara gives the example of Tosefes Yom HaKippurim. If you just take the Gemara alone, Gemara does not qualify in any way. The original qualification was Drabbanan Daraisa. That's a reasonable place to draw the line. We're not surprised by that. You can give people leeway in Drabbanans, you can't give them leeway in Daraisas. It makes perfect sense in terms of the Chomer HaDavar. But if you say that it applies Bein B'Daraisa, Bein D'Rabbanan, it doesn't seem to be any other limitations in the Gemara to Mutav Shiyu Shogin V'Al Mazidin, and one could have walked away from the Gemara, and it's quite possible that many Rishonim and Poskim do, saying that, you know, if it's a choice between Shogig and Mazid, maybe if it's even the risk of Mazid, Mutav Shiyu Shogin. That second point I just made was, the first point I'm making is that the Gemara doesn't qualify within D'Araisas. The Gemara doesn't even make it perfectly clear what the probability of the person continuing to be an avarian after the tochacha is. For all we know in the Gemara, it could be that the risk of zadon is so great that even that allows for mutav shu shogigin, even when it's possible that you could correct behavior. That would be remarkable. Now, on the first point, that this applies to any daraisa, no matter what, that's certainly the view of many Rishonim. But as we'll soon see, lahalacha, in normative psak halacha, that's not the view which ended up prevailing, and I think that is fascinating, because, again, in the Gemara itself, there's probably no reason to limit what the Gemara says. As far as the second issue is concerned, almost all the Rishonim and almost all of the Achronim are the opinion that a safek will not justify mutav shiyu shogig. In other words, the fear of mezid being so compelling that it allows for you know, shogig rather than safek tikkun, the Bali Tosis all reject that. Tosis in Bava Basra and Tosis in Bava Zara, you have it here on the page, I'm sure. Tosis in Shabbos, the Bali Tosis reject it. Almost all the Rishonim who speak about it reject it. The Shulchan Aruch certainly rejects it. In the Rambam, it's not clear. The Ravan has a remarkable sheet. Do we have the Ravan?
No.
The Ravan in Simin Chafei, it's an unusual shita, is the one exception. Ravan talks about a case of a mikvah where it was the mikvah was flowing through pipes from the water to the place of Zochlin through the Sinoros, and it is Mayim Shuvim, it's not Mayim Shuvim. The Ravan says, in my opinion, it's not really Mayim Shuvim because it's always connected to the Nahar. That's not for now. So, however, even according to those who think that it's wrong, Mutav Shu Shogin V'Ayu Mezidin, even on the Safek that they won't listen to. And there are some poskim, I think Rav Avad Yosef picks up on this Ravan in one or two places. The Maril also has something like this in his discussion of Hilchos Erev Yom Kippurim, where he talks about, again, Ben HaShemashos. He too seems to take the opinion that even the threat of Mezid is enough to allow for Mutav Shu Shogin. And if you look at the Gemara, there's no reason not to read the Gemara that way, per se, if you're focusing on the two Gemaras that speak about this halacha. If that were to be true, that there are no Doraisa qualifications, and that it applies even to Safek, then it would be a remarkably wide license. And it would reflect, hashkafically, how far we will go to protect members of Klal Yisrael from Mezid. But as I say, the fact is that the Rishonim felt otherwise. In some cases, because they wanted to or they needed to resolve apparently contradictory evidence. In other cases, it just seems, again, like I said before, to flow from conviction that such a license is just inconceivable. That this could apply to any Daraisa, that it could apply even be Safek, especially the Safek part of it, doesn't seem conceivable. The problem of Safek also would make very problematic certain major Gemaras, particularly the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Hei, where Gemara seems to say that the suggestion was made by the Malachim. Do we have that?
Yeah.
What page is that? That's a very fascinating Gemara. Again, it has, I think, significance beyond the line itself. Where is it? Page 2 and 3. I'm sorry, I didn't have this before, so I wasn't. I see. Okay, I got it. Okay, so the Gemara here in Shabbos. I see. So if you see Nun Hayom and Aleph, Afagav Lo Mekabel Ochin. Oh, that's the Tosis. Ah, yeah, the top. Okay, so if you look at the Gemara, says. The Gemara says, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu leGavri Alechu Shoma Mitzvah Shel Tzadikim Tav Shel Dyo Shlo Yishutu Malachi Chavala Mitzvah Shel Rishoyim Tav Shel Dam Kdei Shiyishutu Malachi Chavala. So Amar Smidus Adin Lifnei Kadosh Baruch Hu Rebono Shel Olam Manishtanu Elam Elu, Amal Halal Tzadikim Gemurim, Alal Rishayim Gemurim. Amal the fun of Rabbanu Shalom, Hayu Biyadim Limchos Vilamichu, they're Rishayim too. So the Gemara says, Amar Lahu, Amar Lahu, Goli Biyadu Lefanai, Shem Michu Bahem, Lai Kablu. Rabbanu Shalom said, I know that it wouldn't have helped. It's just a fascinating Gemara. Amru, so the Gemara says, Amar Rafanav, Rabbanu Shalom, Im Lefanecha Galui, Lahem Hi Galui. So basically, this Gemara is very fascinating Gemara, meaning even if, number one, it just shows how imposing the obligation of Tochacha is, meaning even though the Rabbanu Shalom was saying Gal Lefanai, it made absolutely no difference that they didn't do Tochacha. The fact that they didn't do Tochacha, that they didn't know that it wouldn't make a difference, still constitutes not just an Aveira. It sounds like a very serious Aveira. They're Avaryanim in the same way that the Avaryanim, almost like Nitfasu al Avonas Hadar, even if it wouldn't have made a difference. Very extreme Gemara. But at minimum, why can't you just say Mutav Shu Shogim Valyu Mazidim? That's why they were Lo Mocha. So the Bali Tosas say, you see from here, that's one of the Tosasim, that the Din of Mutav Shu Shogim Mazidim is limited to Yodea Bevadai. We'll get back to that soon also. How can anybody really know Yodea Bevadai? Some of the posts can say Yodea Bevadai doesn't mean Yodea Bevadai. It means you have good, strong reasons. There's no real Leidus HaSafek. That's my formulation. In other words, it's a rove. One says Ruba Deruba, one says rove. The other one says it's the kind of thing that's so entrenched, the Tshuva, the Mil Tzedaka that they all quote, who says it's been for generations, it's so entrenched, it's a kula, you know, which is unacceptable, and people are doing it anyway. It shows it's so entrenched, you can count on the fact that it's not easily overturned. They're not going to listen. But whatever it means to be Yodea Bevadai, I think that's an important issue too. But, you know, if it's not Vadai Vadai, it partially is based on this Gemara, but some are shown in, don't base it on the Gemara. This is another Pashut, that if there's a possibility that he might actually stop doing the Aveira, so we should risk the Zadon for that. That in itself is a fascinating argument, especially if it's not based on Makar. And Rishonim talk about it that way. The Rosh in a Tshuva, Klal Vav Simen Gimel, says if you have a Safek, then of course you're obligated to be Mochiach, because you're obligated to save yourself. Meaning it's a Safek violation of Tochacha. In light of the Book of Yosef in Yevamos, on the topic of Shem She Mitzvah Lom Davra Nishma Kach Mitzvah Lom Davra Sheino Nishma, so Book of Yosef has several other factors. There shouldn't be a Pischan Peh to the Avaryan, or just to be Mezakehim on the off chance. So whether it's your own obligation of Tochacha, or you know, you're concerned for him and making sure he has the opportunity to actually achieve you know, the ideal, or it's a question of piskon peh, most of the posts come to the opinion that this halacha mutushu shogin requires either yediyah vadois or something which at least constitutes a very strong umdana that you're not likely to overcome. But again, that's not from the Gemara. It's either putting together other Gemaras, or it's based on the conviction of other factors, or the impossibility of Mutav Shu Shogin being such a strong idea. On the other side of it, if you were to take the Gemara to Kipshuto, and again I think there are some Rishonim at least who hold this way, it gets lost because after the Shulchan Aruch sets down certain klalim in a very definitive and a very decisive way, so the subsequent discussions which integrate that all assume some of the chilukim that we're talking about, restricting certain daraisas, limiting this to vadai or close to vadai, etc. But according to the Rishonim who don't, I think what we'd have to say is, as I say, two things, the Rabban and some of the others, maybe the Rambam. Number one, what I said before, which is Avera Bezadon and the protection of Klal Yisrael is even worth the risk of Shgaga when there's also a possibility of achieving the ideal. But also they reflect another important idea. And that is, according to some Rishonim, clearly a debate among the Rishonim, the concept of Tochacha may be limited to Zadon, may not apply to Shgaga. The Avnezer says this very, very clearly in the Tshuva and Yoredeya. I think it's, before I saw it, I thought it's implicit in a number of the sugyas and rishonim. The way he puts it is, there's an obligation of arbus bishgaga, but there's no obligation of tochacha. And there are differences between arbus and tochacha. Tochacha, you would be obligated, even if you know the person's not going to listen. Arbus has to weigh, calculate, you know, silence versus articulating and warning to see whether or not it's better for him or worse for him, taking the risk into consideration. I think on another level, maybe it's the same thing or maybe it's a little different, but the way I thought to formulate it also is that in the case of Mezid, we're talking about Azhara, and we're talking about forced compliance or Hasra. It's a question of the gap between Mezid and Mezid Bahasra, but somebody already is a Varyan, the Mezid, and he's always already a Rasha. And it's a question whether you A, gain much when you save him from a hasra'a beyond mezid. It's a question whether he deserves to be saved since he's already a Rasha, Haliteo l'Rasha v'yamos, as the Yireim, which I see is printed here. That's how the Yireim explains it. This tochacha, even if he's not going to listen, Haliteo l'Rasha v'yamos. So from several points of view, mezid is different. Shogeg, that's a different matter entirely. Shogeg, it's not just azhara, and it's not just forced compliance. There's also an element of bishinanta levanecha. There's a chiyuv talmud Torah. There's an obligation to teach him so that he should simply be informed. That is a different concept, perhaps, entirely. And one could argue that both the difference between whether it's arvus and tochacha or talmud Torah and hochacha on the one hand, as well as the gap between shogeg and mezid, and the present status of an Avaryan B'Shogeg as someone who deserves protection, all of these and more may explain the differences between Shogeg and Mezid. Moreover, the response to incorrigibility may be different for Shogeg and for Mezid. By that I mean, and let's say you're Mochiach and it's not going to help. So in the context of Shogeg, if you try to educate him and the education doesn't work, so it might be all for naught. In the case of tochacha, there is an element of tochacha that has to do with the mochiach and not just with the avarian. People struggle to explain shitas hayireim, which is even if we know 100% it's not going to help, the yireim says nonetheless. In the case of mezid, there's an obligation of tochacha. There may not be nitfasin al Osan of Averos. I mean, if you don't do the tochacha, you don't get the Avera. That he understands from the Gemara in Shabbos Nunhei. But the mitzvah of tochacha, at least there is. Why? Why is there a mitzvah of tochacha when nothing is accomplished? So some people say, well, ein darshina in time of the crow. We don't know why, but the pasuk doesn't limit it, and ochayach tochiyach hasam yisach. But I think that the more standard and the more acceptable explanation is that there's an aspect of tochacha for the mochiach. When you encounter transgression and it doesn't bother you and it doesn't spur you to respond, then something within you is lost at that point in time. That's part of hokeach tochiach samisecha lo sisa lo chet. It's also part of lo sisna sachicha bilavavecha. All of these elements come to play in mezid that don't come to play as much in shogeg. So if we were to take the Gemaras alone and some of the unvarnished Rishonim and extend Mutav Shu Shogin, it would be quite a gap between Mezid and Shogin. If we qualify, as we'll soon get to some of the qualifications, we end up bringing Mezid and Shogin a lot closer together. We can do that, I'll take a question in one more second, in two ways. Either by making Mutav Shu Shogin much more restricted, which is what a lot of the posts can do, and we'll get to that in a minute, or by applying the rule of the Gemara Nivama Samachem Adveis, Kashem Shemitzvah Lo Mardavar Nishma, Kach Mitzvah Lo Lo Mardavar Shalom Nishma, applying that more forcefully to Mezid as well. The Smag, for example, disagrees with the Yireim. Says even in Mezid, we are going to be silent when there's absolutely no impact. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that kind of that goes to the question of whether or not, I mean, the halacha, since almost all the poskim paskin, that you can't risk it. Mutav shiyu shogin is you don't do all safek. You only do it all rove, or vadai. So it ends up that you have to be pretty clear that he is a shogeg, and that he would remit, that he is a shogeg, and that you have no impact. So it ends up in as it would be more of an afkamina if you had the right to leave him alone misafeg. But if you don't, and you really have to be certain, then you know, then if you're certain that he won't listen, but you're not sure whether he's a shogeg or a mazid, you know, maybe you have the right to rely then on the fact that you're a shogeg, but you know, it doesn't affect more than that, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
I understand a lot of this, or all of it, has to do with basically saying something to somebody or having an interaction with them. What about the possibility that you could do some of this passively, that you have non-religious relatives or friends right over your house, and by virtue of it, seeing you do refrain from doing certain avera or perform certain mitzvot, they're made aware of the fact that these avera or mitzvot are out there
right,
and are now no longer in the realm of shogi.
Right. I think it's a very good question. I think it's a davar pashut that you know, while one should, you know, exercise always judgment in such circumstances, but by and large we want people to learn from our example. We don't want to suppress our own mitzvos behavior so that they won't turn into you know, mezidin, and instead of shogin. That would be more than peculiar, more than ironic. But I hear exactly what you're saying. I'll just give you you know, one incident that I did come across in Poskim that I think much more neutral. There's a Tshuva of the Heart Tzvi. I'll speak about its context if I get to it in a minute. I'm getting less and less optimistic that I'm going to be able to go through some of the basic issues, but there is a question of how to interpret the Davar Shein Mefurash, which I'll get to in a minute. Heart Tzvi talks about a shochet who shechts meat, and there's some treifas, but it's a kind of treifas about which you might say mutav shu shogegin v'lo mezidin, and whether or not it's his problem. Does he have to warn the people, say you can eat this but you can't eat that, etc.? And he says no, you can apply the rule of mutav shu shogegin v'lo mezidin. So in the tshuvas of the Tzitz Eliezer, I think it's the one that I have, I think I have them both here, Rav Voldenberg responds and says, number one, I don't agree with your definition of mefurash. We'll get that in a second. Number two, the idea that you would apply mutav shu shogegin on something which is actually initiated by the Oved Hashem in some way, that he did something, and the question is whether, and what he did is going to cause the other fellow, or contribute to the other fellow's being an avarian, but the question is, does he have to tell him? Because if he tells him, you know, this and this and this that I put in your home, this you can eat and that you can't eat, and he's not going to listen to you. This way he'll be a shogeg, that way he'll be a shogeg in a mail, this way he'll be amazed. He says, the idea of mutav shiyu shogegin, when you're responsible, that's obscene. Okay. Now this is a little bit of a different case, which you're talking about, but and as I say, I think one should always exercise judgment, but the idea that one would inhibit his proper behavior in order to safeguard or protect the fellow Jew from realizing that something is usur, so that then he'll be amazed, not a shogeg, I think that is, you know, more than a stretch. So sensitivity, yes, but the main sensitivity, as I've been saying all along, what I'm trying to explain here is Kol Yisrael Rebim Zev LaZeh is a reason to get him on the straight and narrow, and sometimes it's a reason to step back and let him, you know, and let his ignorance be bliss. But the goal of his ignorance being bliss is the same as the goal, the primary goal, which is getting him back in a road of Torah mitzvahs. Maybe it's to make the quality of his religious life better. And therefore, you have to be sensitive, you have to, you know, consider what you're doing, be roas anolad, but the idea that you would, you know, hide your proper behavior, you know, so as not to disturb his you know, blissful ignorance is more than a stretch. Yeah.
But there are cases where you hold back. For example, you have some over for Shabbos dinner, they consider to be their Shabbos and the Smith and everything.
Right.
But to have them come to the Davening with you beforehand, on our second room walks in, like, oh, it's disgusting, and they have the women sent from the men, and their children and kids, and anything that they ever see from that on at the Shabbos table is now meaningless because it's attached.
Right. It's a very good point. I was going to get to it in the end. I'll just make a comment about it now. I don't think that that's exactly the same case.
Okay.
Because I don't think that you are instigating. I think it's a question of, you have to decide in the context of Kiruv, what do you want to expose people to at what point? And I think there's a difference between, you know, denying things or suppressing them in a context where you're already there, which I think may border on what the Anto Shlomo famously called Ziyafat Torah on the one hand. That's misrepresenting Torah.
Uh-huh.
That's different than, I think, withholding, not telling the whole story, or not exposing people all at once to everything, because they're just not they don't have the capacity, given the stage that they're in, to absorb it, to understand it. In a sense, it might even be ziyafat Torah to expose them to certain things when they can't handle it because you're not presenting it to them as it is. Now, if you meet a person, you know, very liberal, you know, Jew who's, you know, just finding out about Judaism, the first thing you tell him about is Balek and Mitzvah Zeh Shezman Grava. By the way, I'm not equating the two at all. But the first thing you tell him about is a Balek. That's the terrible cue. Now, if he says, I read in a book about this thing called a Balek, is it true? If you were to lie about it, that would be Ziyafat Torah. But for you to use your intelligence and not to volunteer a Malek until, you know, until 3 weeks later, or 3 years later, as the case may be, or to bring him into the shul, as you say, in other words, Sheva al Taseh, that is very different than Mutav Shushogin, than being what the Tzitz Eliezer calls being the Sabe blow, like you're putting in front of him, you're responsible. Now, for example, if I invite somebody, where it does come up with the Shabbos question, is I invite somebody to come to my home so he can enjoy the wonderful Zmiros, maybe not at my home, but, you know, well, the children sing loud. So, the wonderful Zmiros, the Rebbetzin's good cooking, the conviviality and collegiality of the environment, and I don't bother to tell him that there's something called, Isser Malacha in terms of how he gets here. Now, if he knows, and he's doing it, that presents a different issue. The evil issue, other issues, which I don't want to get into right now, that's a topic in its own right and a difficult one. But let's say he doesn't know about driving on Shabbos being a problem. And you know that he's going to drive, and he doesn't know that it's a problem, and basically he's driving to get there. I think that the Tzitz Eliezer would say that Mutav Shiyu Shogigin would not apply in such a case. And on the contrary, in a way, you're instigating his improper behavior. And that, I think, is a trickier question than the question of suppressing behavior. But I think these are all, I mean, the question of education and at what point, and, you know, full disclosure, at what point, the ambition of Kiruv and Limud, I think, is a very important question, but I think that there are some differences between that and actual circumstances of Mutav to Shogin. Okay, let me get back to Shogin, because it's running a little late. Okay. So this is one perspective on Mutav Shiyu Shogin, what could have been the perspective of the Gemara, what might be the perspective of the Rambam, what is partially the perspective of the Ravan, and so on. On the other hand, what about the limits? The norm in Psak Halacha, again, learning how to Paskin is about, it's important to know the range, and it's important to know when, as a Snif Laheter, you can call upon that range, and it's also important to know what is normally accepted. It's fascinating sometimes how these things come about, but important nonetheless. The Ran had a girsa in the Gemara and Shabbos, in which the Gemara and Shabbos remained with the distinction between Drabanan and Daraisa. The Shita Mukubetzes in Beitza says, if that's the case, we paskin like the sugya in Shabbos. According to that view, Mutav Shiyu Shogigin would be limited only to Drabanans. That's the other extreme. Not the absolute license, but the absolute limitation. Anything having to do with any daraisa, tocheach tocheach, kol Yisrael arayim zeh lazeh, end of story. The Ran himself does believe that there are this machlokas hasugis. In our sugi, it's the same, I should add, the girsos. Rabbeinu Chananel also has two girsos, I should mention in Beitza. But the Ran's conclusion is, if there is a machlokas hasugis, we paskin like Beitza. Which means that it's bein drabanan and bein daraisa. And the preponderant view is that either there is no machlokas asugyas, or like the Ran, If there is, we paskin like the Sugan Beitza, not like the Shita Mekubetz. So that's, in terms of the extreme range, it's an important Shita. But again, l'halacha, it seems clear, normative view is that bein b'daraisa, bein b'drabban. However, there are still possible limits to this daraisa, within daraisa. One is the difference between Essen and Lavin. That's important. The Ritva and Makos makes this distinction. Mutav Shishogin applies to Mitzvah Saseh. It doesn't apply to Lavin. How that fits in with Tosefus Yom Kippurim, that should be viewed as more of an Aseh rather than an extension of the Isser. That's an important issue for that, not for now. Moreover, many of the Achronim ask questions from some of the Sugyas, Shabbos, Avodah Zarah, etc., where it seems like Mutav Shishogin, not by name, but by implication, is being applied to Lavin as well. And they come up with a suggestion, maybe there's a difference between whether nitvasin, again, whether your silence makes you responsible, or whether you simply violate tochacha, or they come up with other explanations. This idea of being mechalik between Essen and Lavin, I think, is a very important idea. But again, I have to say that lahalacha, it's quoted by some poskim, usually as a sniff here and there to add to other things, or it's just an interesting part of the conversation. On the whole, Shitas HaRitva is a Shitas Yachid. And nonetheless, I think it has some conceptual significance in that the difference between Essen and Lavin, I think, is an important one. And even if we don't really draw the line there, it may help us to understand other things. And that is, Essen are more spiritual opportunities. Lavin are Averos. It's easier to say the concept of Mutashu Shogin. No, we're not going to force this upon him, given, you know, the risks, or given the reality that, you know, that Mezid is worse and he's not going to do it anyway. So to pass up the opportunity, you know, through ignorance, in this case, the ignorance is blissful. On the other hand, if we're talking about Lavin, basically what we're saying is we just don't have the right to make cheshbonos. Ma'isavera is a ma'isavera. There's no excuse. And we don't paskin this way, but the question is whether there isn't some echo of it still in a way that we do paskin, which I'll explain in just a minute. This idea of the difference between Essen and Lavin, I think, is reflected in many things. Why we have korbanos for Lavin and we only have an ola for an aseh. Why aseh is ad shlish bedamav and Lavin are, you know, there's no price tag. It's this idea of absoluteness as opposed to you pay a monetary price and you pay a spiritual price in mitzvah saseh. That's the Ritva. Where this might be echoed is in the maybe most intriguing part of the sugya, and that's the Bala Itur. Bala Itur came up with the distinction within daraisas between davar mefurash and davar she'ena mefurash. And I think it's remarkable. It got accepted l'halacha. Some of the Rishonim picked up on it. The Ran, Tshuvas HaRosh, Rajba, they picked up on it. It made it into the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah paskins that way. And from then on, it became so accepted that you have discussions in some of the poskim and achronim. The burden is to prove that there are actually poskim or sugyas who might disagree. It's amazing, because this distinction of Eina Mefurash is Eina Mefurash. I mean, where did it come from? So some say, oh, if there's indeed a stira between the sugyan Shabbos and sugyan Beitza, about whether daraisas are subject to mutav, so maybe the difference is Mefurash and Eina Mefurash. That's a big if, and even then it's quite an interesting distinction. Mefurash bakra, Eina Mefurash bakra. It comes to the Bala Itur, who's a prominent Rishon, but it's by no means true that every Bala Itur makes it into the Shulchan Aruch and wins the day. It doesn't appear in the Rambam, doesn't appear in the Rishonim before the Rambam, or the Itur, as far as I know. And the Bala Tosis never mention it. The Rush of the Bala Tosis picks up on it. And yet, it made it to the Ramah. It made it to such an extent that when the Rambam says, Mutav Shushogin Hilchos Shvisa Sasar, and he says, B'chol Adom Elazeh, he says, cases like it, so the Magen Mishnah says, he means cases which are Eina Mefurash Bakra. He means the Bala Itur. I can't take a Shmuel D'Oraisa that he doesn't, but if we didn't have the Bala Itur in front of us, no one would have come up with that explanation in the Rambam. This Mefurash and Eina Mefurash made it. So when you consider the source and the sources that it comes from, that's remarkable. Even more remarkable is what Mativo Shel Chilug Zeh. What does that mean? Mefurish Bakra, Inu Mefurish Bakra. Something is Doraisa, Ase Lavin, Kares. These are distinctions that we know of. What is Mefurish Bakra and Inu Mefurish Bakra? So there is a group of Rishonim, I think beginning with the Rajba, and then it was picked up by the Achronim this way as well. The Darkei Moshe picked it up, and then later on the Mishnah Berura, maybe before the Mishnah Berura, and then the Mishnah Berura. And basically, they made out of Mefurash and Einam Mefurash the issue that you asked me a little bit about before. How do you know somebody's Shogeg? How do you know they're Mason? They turned Mefurash and Einam Mefurash into Shogeg and Mason. Obvious Shogeg, obvious Mason. But that assumes, and that's what they did, and I think on two levels. In terms of the initial, he claims he's Shogeg, but it's Mefurash Bakra. Right. That assumes a certain literacy, which in a society like ours certainly doesn't exist. In which case, if that's really the halacha, we have to question whether or not we don't have more flexibility, because Mefurash Bakra is still Shogeg in our day, unfortunately. Moreover, it also affects, well, what's likely to happen, how compelling and convincing will be the case of convincing the fellow. Moreover, if he's not convinced, is he the kind of gavra, this is my explanation, if he's not convinced by Mefurash Bakra, if he's not convinced by Einam Mefurash Bakra, he's stubborn, he doesn't have a good education, he's entrenched. If he's not convinced by Mefurash Bakra, he's a Rasha. So then what you're really weighing is, should I be protecting, you know, a person who only needs protecting if he's going to be a Rasha, should I be protecting a Rasha from a Shogeg? These are my explanations. The main one that appears is, you know, he'll listen because you can show it to him, or he's not really Shogeg to begin with. If this is the case, then it's not really a question so much of Mefurash or Einam Mefurash, but Mefursam v'Einam Mefursam, as, for example, the Chidah points out, and others point out. Okay. This is the normative view, I should add. I don't like it particularly. This doesn't appeal to me, and I just think it's not obvious if that's what Mefurash means or doesn't mean. But again, in terms of the line of posting, from what I can see, I mean, we're talking about the Rajba, the Rama, Mishnah Berura in our time. It's hard to fight. Clearly, the Abnezer didn't understand earlier. Clearly, the Shittim Kubetzes didn't understand it this way. Shittim Kubetzes understood that what the Itur really meant was something that is a hierarchy. It's acceptable to say mutav about an application. I'm formulating it in my own terms at the moment. Something which is more kal, I call it an application. It's not acceptable to say it about something which is an explicit pasuk in the Torah, the way I'm translating it, i.e., not only a davar chamur, but a category itself, a principle in the Torah. That doesn't always follow true, and if I'm right, then there might be nafka mina, and I'll explain in just a second. As I say, Shittim Kubetzes' language, we don't have in front of us, I think points in that direction. He talks about the Gra, I think, points in this direction. I don't know if we have the Gra here or not, but I'm not going to read it. But the Gra in Shulchan Aruch says, this comes to be Miyashev, the Stira, and the Two Gemaras, Drabanan or Daraisa, because we often find, we sometimes find that Darash Einu Mefurash is in the category, is called the Drabanan. That has nothing to do with whether it's Shogeg or Mezid, on the lines of the Rajba, the Rama, the Mishnah Berura. What it has to do with, and he quotes Chatzi Shir, Rabbi Kveger on the spot in Shulchan Aruch says, what about Chatzi Shir? Don't some Rishonim think that Chat Linyan Nishba L'Kayim is a mitzvah? We say Ein Shvua Chal Al Shvua. So the person is Mujva V'Yomed Bar Sinai. If he's Nishba L'Kayim is a mitzvah, doesn't it's not Chal. But if it's Chatzi Shir, he's not allowed to eat something because of Chatzi Shir, and then he takes a Shvua. That's Chal. Why? So some Rishonim explain because it's not Mefurish Bakra. So it's not Mujba B'Yomer. So the Ran and the Gra seem to be referring to Einam Mefurash Bakra in that context. That's not even necessarily Kal and Chamor. What is it? Or I'll give you the other example. To me, it's like the Rambam's Divrei Sofer. The way I understand the Rambam's Divrei Sofer, which I'm not going to get into right now. Some people are my shir, so they know my view on that. But the Bekitzur, the Rambam's Divrei Sofer is, it's important. There's a reason why certain things are Mefurash Bakra and other things are learned out of drashas. I understand that. The larger reason is things that are Mefurish Bakra are the category itself. Things that are learned out from Drasha are one step lower in the hierarchy. They're an application of it, or they're a diluted form of it. But I think the Gra, Shittim Kuvet says, this whole perspective has in mind. In which case, we have to figure out literally Mefurish Bakra. It's not a question of Mefursam, Shogeg and Mezid, how we've assessed this person's incorrigibility. It's really a question of the following, and I think the Hashkafa significance is very important. We can stand by Mutav Shu Shogin, William Mazidin, when people make mistakes. Mistakes of application, mistakes of you know, stubbornness, intransigence, so they, even if they can't be brought to an understanding. We can't stand by when whole categories in the Torah are being wiped out, neutralized. That's too much a matter of too much is being set aside. The issue isn't the extent of the Ma'isa Aveiro, Tama Doraisas. Could be the Dovar Sheh, Enim Mepurus Bakras, every bit is Chamor. The question is, what's left? And I think this is an important consideration in Mutav Shu Shogin generally. And this relates back to what I said a second ago about the echo of the Aseh and the Lav in a way. In other words, we can live with certain violations, certain ignorance. We can chalk it up to intransigence or ignorance and so on. Other things are just unacceptable. And I think that's an important principle going forward. Now, of course, there's huge nafkaminas, and there are huge discussions about this. Number one, what about something that is not mefurish bakra exactly, and it's also not exactly in a mefurish bakra? Losasa ko malacha. So, doesn't say losasa zorea kotzer ma'amer dosh. It does say hotzah, and it does say Havara, but not the others. But that is the Torah Shebaal Peh meaning of the word malacha. That's what the pasuk means according to Torah Shebaal Peh. And there's no give on that. There's no machlokas about it. It's not a secondary level. Is that considered mefurish bakra or ainu mefurish bakra for purposes of mutav shu shogin? So that's a debate. Again, it has roots in some of the earlier poskim, and I think I put it down here. That's part of the debate between the Tzitz Eliezer and the Har Tzvi, and Rav Pesach Frank. Rav Pesach Frank says about Melachos of Shabbos, and he says it also about Treifas. Right? Most of the Treifas are Lachol Moshe Misina, except for Drusa. They're all the same level, but they're derived to Lachol Moshe Misina. So that's what the Yazis Tshuva. He says if the guy you know, produces meat and it has Treifas, but not Drusa, so it's Einu Mefurish Bakra. So Mutav Shishogim. That's what Tzitz Eliezer says, no, that's not in Mefurish Bakra, because that's the definition of the word treifa. We just don't, it's not, there's one case that's explicit, and the others are also included in the word treifa. They're just not spelled out. But it's not like a secondary level. Moreover, in this case, you're the one who shechted it, you're putting it in his home, the fact that he won't listen to you is irrelevant, you can't invoke Mutav Shu, that's what I was referring to before, can't invoke Mutav Shu Shogin when you're the one who's misaveh the Shkaga to him. I think it's an important principle. The Avnei Nezer, I think, also learned this way, and that tshuva that I mentioned in the Yoredeya, I think Taf Aleph, whatever it is. He too says, I don't understand, I don't know what Mefurish Bakra is about, I don't understand it, he says. What exactly is it? What is Mefurish Bakra? What's not Mefurish? Is it Mefursam? Is it like Dvarim Shat Sedukim? Eina Micholin Lach Farbo? Is that what it is? Is it like the Sugyan Horios? Hartzvi also speaks about it. He says, no, it's nothing about the Sugyan Horios. Is it things that are undeniable? If it's about Shogeg and Mezid and incorrigibility and so on, then it's about deniability. It's not really about Mefurish Bakra and Mefurish Bakra. You have to look at all these cases in that light. If it's really about what I think the Gra and the Shittim Kuvet earlier, I think the Avnei Nezer and possibly others are talking about, then it has to do with how much is left of the concept given the mutav, and how unacceptable is this particular ignorance. Yeah. I'm sorry? Well, I think again it would depend on the tzibur. But if you're talking about a you know, as I say, the two sides of Washington Heights and Borough Park and Bnei Brak and so on, so in theory you're 100% right. I mean, it's something from the Purish Bashukhana. It's almost like, you know, Tos Bashikal Adas and Tos Bidvar Mishnah in the context of Dayan Shita. You know, there are mistakes that are wrong, but we understand them, and there are mistakes that are just unacceptable in every way. So if it's incorrigibility is unacceptable, or lack of, it's, you know, bar be'rav, every bar be'rav knows this, then it doesn't have to be mefurish bakra. You're absolutely right. It could be mefurish, and it could end up being shulchan aruch. Just as in the other direction, for the other community, the tinuk shenishba community, it could be a pasuk in chumash, and it could still be enu mefurish to them, if that's the issue. According to the way I understand the Balei Yitur, which I think is in the line of the Shittim Kuvatzis, the Gra, the Avnei Nezer, etc., it's not about that. It's an objective question. The role and these things play in halacha. How crucial are these things? You can't say mutav shushogin about certain ideas and certain issues. You can't say it about Avodah Zarah. You can't say it about Gilui Arayos. You can't say it about Shlichus Damin. You can't say it about Isur Shabbos. Many things. You can't say it about Yom Kippur. There's a corollary to this also, or a parallel question. What about Safek? Let's say a violation of a Safek Daraisa. So this is an issue that comes up already in the sugya itself. Because the sugya talks about Tosefes Yom Kippurim, and there are two girsos there in discussion already by the Rishonim, and I understand the girsos. And what if it wasn't Tosefes Yom Kippurim? What about Ben HaShemashos itself? What about the women doing Malacha Ben HaShemashos? How about that? So the fact is there are some Rishonim who say in Achanami Mutav Shushogig would apply to that as well. Others say no. Rav Nachman ben Aramban in Beitza says, yeah, we would apply Mutav Shiyu Shogun even on a Safek Doraisa. And it's, by the way, it's understandable in a way, because at least only a Safek. In a way, I would say a Vadai, frankly, if I had to choose between a Safek Doraisa and a Vadai Doraisa in a Mefurish Makra, from a certain point of view, I would say the Safek Doraisa is more Mutav Shiyu Shogun. Right? He simply maybe is not really violated. The other Rishonim seem to be avoiding it. The Yamshel Shlomo makes this diuk. The Magen Avraham picks up on it. They say, no, Safek is Kilu Mefurish Bakra. Now the Yamshel Shlomo and the Magen Avraham add, because we hold, actually Yamshel Shlomo adds, Safek Doraisa Lechumra Doraisa, and therefore it's Kilu Vadai. The Machzor Shekel points this out in the Magen Avraham as well. He says, but according to the Rambam, who holds Safek Doraisa Lechum is a Drabanon, so maybe we should treat Safek. Again, I'm almost running out of time, so I don't have time to go into this, but in my opinion, that's what they say. And I think, again, the normative view is that Safek is treated as Vadai, as Mefurish Bakra, and the normative view is that it really depends whether you hold Safek Doraisa Lechum or not. But in theory, I would have thought that this has nothing to do with Sfeikah d'Oraisa l'chumra l'kula. Even if you hold Sfeikah d'Oraisa l'chumra, I could conceivably consider this to be to apply to Mutav Shiyu Shogegin. It wouldn't be considered Kilu Mefurish Bakra. And the other direction as well, even if you held that Sfeikah d'Oraisa is l'kula, I might have said it's Kilu Mefurish Bakra. I don't really see why they should. I can see why you can make the chiluk. I don't think it's necessarily compelling. But all of these point to another issue as well. The post can discuss nashim. How come the focus is on nashim? Not so sure that it is on nashim. The truth is, in some of the cases, the Gemara speaks about nashim. Even in the case of Tosefes Yom Kippurim, it's not clear that the reference is to nashim. The Rambam made it into nashim, and it was picked up that way as well. Most post give the opinion that there's no gender difference here between anashim and nashim. The Birkei Yosef deals with the question directly. He says, maybe it's urcha d'milsa. The women are more ignorant in some cases, or they're more stubborn in clinging to their traditions or what they consider to be the proper thing. You can't, Mutav Shishogin is going to apply more to that. But you get a flexible or knowledgeable woman or an intransigent, ignorant man, which, as my name is, certainly you can always have, both directions is, in one case happily in abundance, in the other case happily, unhappily in abundance. So then it's the same halacha, and that's the view of most of the poskim. However, I think there's an interesting line. Some of the poskim make an interesting connection to the question nashim datan kalas. And what I understand, they don't elaborate it fully, but what I understand by it is similar to what I was saying before. And that is, mutav shiyu shogegin, when it's unacceptable to begin with, or when the mazid incorrigibility would be a consequence of rebelliousness is one thing. In that situation, we're less likely to say mutav shu shon bidin. After all, who are we really protecting? There's less of an excuse to begin with for the shogeg. Moreover, the mazed that we're worried about is the mazed of a kind of, it isn't exactly yet, but a kind of haliteu l'rasha v'yamitz. But if it's a function of less exposure to the halachic system, which I think is the idea of Nashim Dat and Kalvus in general, meaning people who are not exposed to, don't have an appreciation of halacha as a system, they don't understand halachic thinking, they're not aware of it as much. And as such, even if you tell them, and even if they kind of believe you that something is asur, but you know they can't assimilate the severity of it. I saw this in one of the poskim, I'm trying to remember where, one of the poskim says, when we talk about shogeg mezid here, he said it's not the shogeg and mezid of karbonos and horios. This shogeg and mezid means, are you taking this as seriously as it deserves to be taken? I think it's a chiddush, but I think it's one that fits in with this idea. And in general, the idea of mefurish bakra, ina mefurish bakra, etc. In other words, we have sympathy. We're sad, but we have sympathy. We have empathy, even, for people who just don't get it. Their lack of education, experience, growing up in a frum environment, whatever it is. So we say mutav shu shogin, it's important to protect them on both sides. In other words, number one, we're more sympathetic to their shkaga. We're also more sympathetic to their incorrigibility. We know where it comes from. And we know that it's not a rebellion, it's a deficiency. And it's part of a bigger picture and a bigger issue. But, you know, if it's somebody who has a sense of what the severity is, but it doesn't matter, he doesn't care. So for such a person, we should say mutav shu shogeg. For all the various reasons that come into play, we would be inclined in that situation. We would be inclined not to. The other factor when it comes to nashim, of course, is that I mentioned before the question of kol yisrael arevim zeh lazeh. Which is a little bit complicated, but I'm going to leave that for now. I only have a couple of minutes left, so let me just skip to some other things just very quickly. Just want to make it clear that some of the issues that I've been pointing to, again, I've tried in each case to tell you where I think, where I understand the normative view is, but I think that the discussions themselves and some of the chilukim are suggestive for an approach to the general issue and the general problem, and I think that is something that needs to be kept in mind. The Tashbetz, the Tshuva of the Rashbats, he discusses another issue, two other issues. Number one, mixed audiences. Not mixed genders here, I'm talking about mixed populations. Let's say you have a little of the Tinoch Shanishba in the crowd, and you also have a little of the of the people who, you know, if they heard, they would change their ways. So how does that work? So the Rashbat says, mutav shu shogin, if it's limited to yediyah vadais, which again is the view of the mainstream of the poskim, the overwhelming majority, with the exception maybe of the Ravon and the Maril, but I was suggesting maybe the Rambam and a few others don't say anything one way or another. That also dictates that when you have to choose between populations, that if you had only this population A, then you would apply properly as a lechatchila. Mutav shu shogeg v'lo yumazidin. I should add, I think it's in a tshuva of the Ginnis Varadim, I was just looking very quickly, where he says that in a situation where you're supposed to say mutav shu shogeg v'lo yumazidin, it's not a heter. Right, that's the proper psak. And to inform people when you shouldn't is like to be machti as a rabbin. So it's a serious matter. So the question is, if you have a mixed population, and this is something in our small world, which is very, very important. Everything is on the internet, and you know, everything is tape recorded. Access to information is almost unlimited, and it's very hard to be selective anymore. It's hard to speak to an audience that is in front of you. you know, without being Rois Anola, that somebody who doesn't have the sensitivity, who didn't see your facial expressions, who doesn't have the knowledge that you're assuming that they have, is not sitting there. So too, this becomes a very important issue for today. Ashvat says, if you have these two populations, you always err on the side, not err, you always opt on the side of those for whom the tochacha will help. As you will restrict mutav shu shogun b'li mezidin, if it means sacrificing some people who otherwise would get a tikkun, to leaving them in a state of shogun. But again, I think this is an issue that is very important, and has, again, I wouldn't say that the mutav shu shogun doesn't exist in the internet age. What I am saying is, to apply mutav shu shogun constructively, one has to be very, very careful and aware that it can have repercussions, unthought of repercussions, that undermine it. See, my time is pretty much up. How you define a shogigin and how you assume that that tochacha will work, as I mentioned before, I think there are different perspectives. The tshuva, the Radvaz, and Il Tzedakah and Ginos Varan, a number of tshuvas, which again they don't speak about, they don't ask the question, Din Tomar, you know, how do you know, Yeshlomar, this is it, but this is the way that they speak about it, implies that there's a difference between like a newfangled nihug, or a psak halacha that someone comes up with, you know, written person who doesn't have, is not within, let's say, the Elo Belo Divra Lakim Chaim prominence, you know, such that his view would be accepted. And people follow it, and they think it's correct, and in that situation, we never say mutav shu shogin v'al yu mezidin. As opposed to a situation of something that is either accepted by the community by themselves, they've been doing it, they don't remember where it came from, or it's very old, it's very entrenched. In that circumstance, we can presume, or we can project shogeg, and it becomes difficult to overturn that kind of thing, and the flexibility is greater. Moreover, the Rashbat also points out that there may be differences in mutav shu shogin for mora hora and for others. And this is very important, obviously, to the group here. You know, for regular citizens, say mutav shu shogin, one thing. You know, for a mora hora, it always comes the issue of, you know, like the Arayim's issue. But to what extent is the tochacha also for him to get on record to make it clear that as a matter of principle, this is unacceptable behavior? Moreover, the standards of hora might just be different than, you know, the obligations of tochacha, or even the obligations of kol yisrael arevim zeh lazeh. The Rashbat considers at least that possibility. The Chachma Shlomer of Shlomo Kluger in Shulchan Aruch says, whatever Hetayrim there are in Mutav Shu Shogin, they are one-on-one, or Betzina. They don't apply to Beparhesia. This is not the same as what I said before, the Rashbats, which is, if something is public and then it affects more than one population, then the question is which population wins out. This is a different issue. What he's saying is, even if the entire population was a population of people for whom he would normally say Mutav Shu Shogin, the Chil Hashem of mutav shu shogigin, and the tchil Hashem mutav shu shogin would override the advantages of mutav shu shogin. Again, I don't know whether or not the preponderant view. It's a line in the Chachma Shlomo. He speculates about it. I'm not sure about it. But again, I think even if we're not sure lahalacha one way or another, there's a certain value. Again, it's a way of reminding us that mutav shu shogin, even when it works, is you're playing with fire essentially. And you have to be very, very careful about it. Where is also an issue. Sefer Chassidim, it's quoted also by the Magen Avraham, says, Mutav Shu Shogigin B'Mokom Rishus, but not in the Beis HaKnesses or a Beis HaMedrash. Standards in the Beis HaKnesses and Beis HaMedrash, even if otherwise the criteria are met for Mutav Shu Shogigin, are not going to apply. You have to have the, you know, a higher level, higher standard, just as for a Mora Haram, maybe. You have to have higher standards. So let me just conclude by saying, you know, this is an interesting, very interesting tshuva of the Chavos Yair also on this topic. He starts off by saying, you know, there's a certain case of a person who was amazed, actually, and the question was, you know, he violated some of the laws of kashrus, and the question is whether to penalize him, and the people said, you know, some of the considerations were, well, if you penalize him, you're going to distance him from the Jewish community, you're going to be merachek him, he's going to, you know, do worse things. After all, chatei kadesh tzaka chavercha, and butav shu shogin below mizidin. You see how we walk that extra, you know, mile in order to makariv people, in order to, you know, to show flexibility. Even tochacha is, you know, the manerach, and so on and so forth. And therefore, maybe it would be kedai to let up on this particular fellow. So he goes through the whole thing. He says that's one side of it. So the other side is that, you know, what's going to happen to the standards of the Jewish community. And then he marshals, you know, all the other Gemaras that say, you know, you can't give an inch, and, you know, it's asusiyad l'Torah. Mutav shu shogun, he says. Mutav shu shogun applies to someone who's a shogeg, and even his shkaga is not based on pshia. You asked me about tinik shenishba before. But it's based on, you know, it's a shogeg for an onus in a way. Doesn't use those words, but it says, there we say chadei kadei shetazakeh. There we say mutav shu shogun. You have to be very, very careful in applying these principles. Kiruv is wonderful, but you have to worry about not only the individual, but the tzibur as well. And the erosion of standards is something which, you know, which we have to take very seriously. In that particular tshuva, he ends up on the side of, on the hard line side, rather than on the soft line sides of it. There's also a tshuva of Moshe Feinstein, which I just wanted to mention, where he talks about the question of, about education. And he talks about, you know, what are you going to say? Mutav shu shogin, and therefore you can't reveal, almost similar to the question was asked before, you can't reveal to people, you know, halachic information, because then there'll be mezidin. So he talks about it, he says, well, no, mutav shu shogin, of course, is limited only in a situation where you know they're not going to listen. And, of course, if somebody's not going to listen, there's no point in teaching him. However, he says, one should be very careful also to distinguish between, even in such a circumstance, teaching bizmanu aveira and shalom bizmanu aveira. Meaning one has to be very careful that, you know, one's concern for mutav shu shogin doesn't get in the way of Talmud Torah and of proper kiruv. And as other poskim also point out, we also have to be very careful not to be too pragmatic in our assessment of members of Klal Yisrael. It's important that we remember that every Jew has a nitzos shel kedusha in him, and that he has the capacity, to be persuaded. So that even if we are, you know, convinced that, you know, mutav shu shogin v'lo mezidin, it's very important that that never be a reason for our own laxity or a reason to project mediocrity on others. In the end of the day, one has to balance tolerance, realism, high standards, and idealism. And for that, one needs a lot of siyata d'shmaya, and undoubtedly, it's also the cause of many sleepless nights. Education requires intelligent selectivity and a program of gradual exposure, exactly the question I was asked before, the Amalek and the Mitzvaseishas Mangroma issues, etc. The Chovos HaVavos says this, I think, very eloquently, talks about the issue of anti-anthropomorphism. He says, of course, you know, the Rambam is 100% right, that, you know, it's totally theologically unacceptable to speak about the Ribbono Shel Olam as if, you know, he were, you know, a physical being. He says, but at the end of the day, you know, you want to be makariv levavos, you want to speak to people, you want to educate children, you know, sometimes you have to bring them along gradually, and if that means, you know, letting them have, you know, certain misleading ideas, you know, for a certain amount of time, that's a different story. I think if you ask the Chovos HaVavos, are you allowed to project to people that you know, their Ribbono Shel Olam is physical, he would say, chas v'shalom. But, you know, when you correct people, when you expose them to things, this is all part of a program that has to be well thought out. And in the end of the day, whether it's tochacha or kol Yisrael areidim zeh lazeh, it all has to be linked to losisna sachicha bilvavecha and losisa olav chait. Constructive kochacha is an art form, as the Gemara explains in Erchin, and as all the poskim say, Bismanenu, it's particularly difficult, and it's one that requires a lot of thought and a lot of Eitza Tova as well. So I wish you all Hatzlacha, Paskening, these Shilohs. Got to some of them. If you can give me a call.
I just understood that if you see them as being the general thing, they in public, maybe people will listen.
Maybe that is what they
did. But these are often good. These are bugging up around. But these are the type of time that we don't want.
I'm begging you.
Where he puts the Magen Avraham and Taz together in parts where they really are arguing with each other. When you see what they really did with it, because you do piece by piece, it's fascinating in some way.
The Reformation also is talking
about. You may be right. All of them are good.
manifest and pray these miracles in our hidden. So may God in our day, holding our trust, and we gave an association now by, here is a low line verse of the law, and this is my answer to Yeshua, then my God, here is my sinner, and I talk now, I, here is my yay on me, see, and I
Amen.